As you might imagine, we've invited NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to be a guest on this program a number of times, including today. That hasn't happened yet, but of course we're going to keep trying. But in the meantime, to help us understand what the NFL is doing about brain injuries and concussion concerns, we've called upon two reporters who know the game well. Joining us now, Pablo Torre. He is a reporter with Sports Illustrated. Also with us, Shalice Manza-Young. She is the New England Patriots reporter for the Boston Globe. Welcome to you both. Thank you both so much for joining us. And Pablo, your case, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Shalice, I'm going to start with you because you're with the Patriots right now at training camp, following training camp. Have the lawsuits and all this conversation around the so-called concussion crisis affected the day-to-day routine?
With the Patriots in particular, they don't like to discuss health issues with the players and things like that. But I think certainly over the last couple of years, it's something that players are becoming more aware of. I think a lot of it is on the player representatives for the union to get the information out to their fellow teammates. Any information that the league has, the NFL Players Association has, you know, to pass it on to the players and educate them on what's going on. There are also supposed to be independent evaluators for concussion that if a player is thought to have a concussion, it's supposed to be somebody independent, not somebody paid by the team who evaluates. And, you know, that way the idea is there's no pressure on them to do what's best for the team, so to speak, instead of what's doing best for the player.
Has that been instituted yet? Is that procedure in place now, or will it be for the upcoming season?
I believe it is in place. The Patriots have had at least one player already whom they've placed on injured reserve, and he will be out for the whole year because of a concussion he suffered. So they've already had at least one documented incident that we know of to this point in training camp.
Pablo, what is your sense of how concerned the league is on the whole? And I know it's hard to generalize, but on the whole, about the so-called concussion crisis. I mean, that's a term that we're using. Do they see it as a crisis?
I think they have to, and I don't think they have a choice at this point. You know, the reality is that Roger Goodell, you know, this is the issue that may well define his legacy, his entire tenure as commissioner. And to me, the turning point in terms of actually caring was October 2009, when you have a noticeably evasive Goodell sitting before the House Judiciary Committee, and really got grilled about the link between head injury and brain disease. And you take that moment, and then you combine that with this total drumbeat of news about new research, about suicides of former players. It's the topic of discussion. And you've seen since 2009, Goodell makes several important changes. You have the founding of the Head, Neck, and Spine Committee, which the creation of which was an implicit repudiation of the league's former, quote-unquote, mild traumatic brain injury committee, which is very famously and very irresponsibly, they were known for downplaying the risks of concussions and is the target of that lawsuit. And then you have new rules to protect players from direct hits to the head, investments in concussion research, a league-wide policy for the first time, as Shalice sort of alluded to, about really actually having a uniform policy on the sidelines to deal with players, all the way down to the Bounty Gate rulings, the suspensions. This is something that must be dealt with because there is no more choice in terms of letting it slide by.
One of the things you're talking about here is the NFL has already given a $1 million unrestricted gift to the Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy, or CSTE, at Boston University School of Medicine to support that research. You know, one could quibble in a $9 billion industry whether $1 million was a substantial gift, but I'm sure they were happy to have it. And also one thing the fans may not have noticed, that the kickoff line was moved up 5 yards from the 30-yard line to the 35. What difference has that made?
Yeah, that was a big player safety move, or at least it was touted as such, and the NFL now has the data to back that up. It was designed to prevent this sort of running start for the coverage team and to, you know, mitigate this incredibly harsh set of collisions on special teams. And the NFL reports now that fewer kickoffs were returned, going from an average of about 80% of kickoffs were returned to just 53%, which then reportedly reduced concussions by 40% in that scenario. And overall, the NFL is saying that concussions are down 12.5% from 2010. And even with that research grant you just mentioned, Michelle, that's big because that, you know, the BU group was a nemesis of the NFL. The fact that they're working together now is an important point.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're continuing our special program focusing on head injuries in sport. Our guests are Shalice Manza-Young. She covers the New England Patriots for the Boston Globe. Also with us, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. He's also a regular contributor to our barbershop. Shalice, you know, we've talked a lot about former players, and a number of former players have become increasingly vocal about their concerns about injuries that they sustained during their playing days and the effect that they think it may have had on their lives. We've also heard from former players who say they wouldn't let their own kids play, but these are retired players. Are you hearing current players discuss concerns about this?
I don't know that it's something they talk about a great deal. You know, when you ask players, I think when they're in the moment, these guys are 24, 25 years old, a lot of them. They've trained the majority of their lives to get to this point, and they don't want to think about what's in the future. I think that's, you know, a syndrome a lot of young people have. I have a 20-year-old son. He really isn't one to look at, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, what might happen to him. And I think it's, you know, the same phenomenon with a lot of these players. But older players, you know, they do start to look at what can happen. And I think if you just pay attention to how old a lot of former NFL players are when they are passing away, or if you keep in touch with former teammates and talk to them about the problems that they're having. Here within the Patriots, just last year, Mike Wright, who was a highly respected defensive lineman, he had to retire because he had two concussions within a year. And he spent months, you know, just sitting in a dark room. He couldn't watch TV. He couldn't get on his computer. He really just could not focus without headaches. And, you know, obviously that tremendously affected his day-to-day life and led to him having to retire. So I think the players see the examples, and I think that's where it starts, is them taking it more seriously and understanding that they have to be their own advocates, that a headache today or a concussion today could lead to bigger things down the road.
Pablo, final thought from you, and I understand I'm asking you to speculate, but hitting is so much a part of the sport. I mean, it's what a lot of people love about the sport. I mean, they're not going to go do it themselves, but there's just something, it just seems like there's something kind of organic and fundamental about the enjoyment of the hit. And it's so much a part of the culture. You know, there are NFL videos sold to fans with titles like Moment of Impact, The Best of Thunder and Destruction. Do you think there's any? I mean, yeah. So can football continue to be football, the football that people enjoy, and make it safe enough for people to play where people don't feel that they're actually contributing to somebody's permanent disability or worse as a result of encouraging people to participate in the sport that so many Americans love?
Right. And I don't think there is, to be honest. I mean, this is the existential question facing football and every member of the football industrial complex, from fans to parents to players to coaches, everybody. And I don't think you can. I mean, the reality is, number one, as you just said, the cultural power of football lies in violence. That's what separates it from basketball and baseball and all the rest. Look at YouTube. Find the most popular highlight videos. I guarantee you that big hits in those NFL videos and also highlight shows has been the main driver of excitement for so many years. But secondly, I think it's also not just the big hits. It's the idea that even if you were to legislate away somehow, you know, the more dramatic hits, the head-to-head sort of hits, the reality is that subconcussive impacts over and over again are what can cause an extreme amount of brain trauma. And that's something that you can't really stop. You can't remove that from football. That's how the game was structured from the very beginning. And if you can't eliminate those smaller hits, and those smaller hits are also going to trickle down in terms of creating long-term disability, that's, you know, I've been beating this drum before, but the NFL replaced boxing in terms of prominence culturally. And I think the NFL is a lot more like boxing than a lot of people would care to admit.
Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Shalice Mansa-Young is the New England Patriots reporter for the Boston Globe. She was kind enough to join us from the stadium where she's covering training camp. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.